Today is the last day that we have a whole day together. But let's think of it like this. If we were having a 1.5 day retreat, we would be beginning with all the excitement of expectation. So let's be in that place, because that is where we are today. We are beginning this day with all the excitement of expectation, and with farewelling quite far away, because we have today, we have this evening, we have tonight, we have tomorrow morning, early waking, meditation, we have breakfast, we have time together. We have so much. Imagine that's the buffet, and you can have every course. Yeah, so we have a lot. But I did want to run through some of the themes that we have been thinking about together before I move on to just a little bit more of, well, nothing is new, newish. That the most central theme of our retreat has been establishing at least some awareness that we live in a constant state of interbeing. That we live in a constant state of interbeing, actually not only with others, also with ourselves. Our awareness of being ourselves is also in fairly constant flux. The sense of beingness is sometimes much more alive than at other times, and our sensitivity, I use that word very deliberately, our sensitivity to the effect our actions are having on others is also frequently in a state of flux. Most of us are fairly constantly sensitive to the effect others' actions have on us. We are pretty tuned to that, aren't we? We can be a bit less tuned, the instrument of love that we are, can be a little bit less tuned to the truth, and please don't take my word for it, experiment. The truth that even through thought we are influencing other people. We are affecting other people. We are affecting the energy, the energetic impulses all around us. I write about this very much in the Universal Heart, particularly about the negative sides of that, and how readily we can transform those unhelpful vibrations once we are aware of it. But once we are aware not only of the effect, but also that we have the power to change. So that takes us to the second of our themes that we've been thinking about very much together, which is the theme of identity. beyond the familiar marks of your identity or sustaining the familiar identity, of course, is the possibility that your primary identity is one of, or one that arises from your original nature. Which is love. Your original nature, which is love, which is in no sense constricting. A kind of nervous anxiety about doing the right thing, being seen to be good, being, you know, sort of admired for always saying the right thing, and so on and so on. That's not what this is about. This is about something that is much riskier, much wilder, much more passionate. I'll give you one example. Our relationship to the earth, our relationship to our planet. If we loved our planet passionately enough, how differently we would protect it. So this love in the original nature is nothing tamed. It is very wild. It has all the elements, of course. It has the element of inspiration through air. It has the element of creativity and continuous creativity. I mean, that is the divine message, isn't it? That creativity is constant. That's what dynamism is all about. Yeah. I know that there was the seventh day and some bit of a rest, but rest is also creative. Rest is enormously creative because it's in times of, as it were, repose that new thought has an opportunity to arise. Fresh thought. When we're just not soaking in what's already familiar or banal. So back to the original nature. Water. To care, we have to feel. To care, we have to let ourselves feel, even when it risks vulnerability. Didn't you hear that in Dr. G. Yunupingo's song? Oh my goodness. Physically, he was blind. But, oh, did not he see and feel? And then there is the earthing, the grounding, the bringing to ground of our insights. Otherwise, the wind will just blow them all away. What we leave behind is not just the trace of our thoughts, but the trace of our attitudes and our actions. Thoughts are also actions. When we manifest them as actions, in a sense, we simply multiply them. Thank you so much, Hilary. Thank you. So we have, in different ways, come to be, I hope, more securely in the presence of our own original nature and also in the presence of each other's original nature. I suspect it hasn't been too difficult to be kind and thoughtful and respectful to one another here in this place. I have noticed so many kindnesses and such subtlety of kindness and acceptance. So the challenge will be how you bring it into a world which does not always ask for, perceive, or endorse the subtle. And there, nature is your teacher. I don't know how nature will be your teacher. It's not for me to say. It's not a recipe. But let me just say that nature teaches us in the grand gestures that are sometimes terrifying, like hurricanes or tsunamis or earthquakes, and you have plenty of that here in New Zealand, and we have plenty of it in our world, and in Australia we also have plenty of drought. So nature's teaching us in the grand gestures, but it is also teaching us constantly through the subtle and especially through the seasonality of life and through renewal. Hazrat Inayat Khan, who lived more or less at the same time, interestingly, as Rilke, some great souls were alive at the turning of the 19th century into the 20th century. And Hazrat Inayat Khan brought from India, he was a musician and a Sufi teacher, brought a most remarkable form of universal Sufism to the West. Hazrat, Hazrat, Inayat, Inyat, Khan, Khan, Hazrat Inayat Khan. And there are many teachers in his tradition still now, including his grandson, Pir Zia Inayat Khan. And twice in my life I've had teachings from him. He's much younger than I am and a very old, deep soul, very intense, beautiful teacher. And Hazrat Inayat Khan, Murshid, said the only true scripture is nature. And in a way, I think there's something in that. Everything else is an attempt to explain, isn't it? But the lessons of nature, this is why we could learn so much from the uncluttedness of indigenous people's globally understanding of our relationship to the earth, which is not to say that all their practices were desirable any more than ours are. But there is something in that attentiveness. But it's not only to the nature out there and in here, it's also to the nature within, to the nature of human nature. May our vision of what human nature is capable of grow in abundance. Yeah? Your nature and mine. This has been my study, I guess, for the last lifetime. But in a more formal way, I guess from my very early 30s. So for a very, very long time. And I could never know enough. I could never know enough. And none of us could ever know enough. What is this human nature? Pierced by something more than the material. Pierced also by spirit. But all of nature is in some way pierced. possessed by spirit. I'm going to read you a mantra which is called the Asatoma, A-S-A-T-O-M-A, the Asatoma mantra, which comes from the Upanishads. Now, one of the sweet thoughts that I hold in my mind as an interspiritual teacher is that Jesus, of course, lived and died as a Jew, and what we know as Christianity was a Jewish sect for hundreds of years. The historical Buddha was utterly formed by Hinduism. He would have recited this mantra on a daily basis, or if not this, another. And the Upanishads have so much to teach us. O God, lead us from the unreal to the real. In other words, lead us from delusion to illumination. Yeah? That's waking up. That's just the first line. That's a call to the rest of our lives, isn't it? Lead us from the unreal, the delusion, the clouded mind, anything that we are doing to cloud the mind. Some of our worries are very unhelpful. Some of our dependencies are very unhelpful. Some of our habits are unhelpful. And we can perhaps say to them, darling, I've sat with you long enough. O God, lead us from the unreal to the real. Lead us from darkness to light. Lead us from death to immortality, peace to all. O Lord God, may there be peace in the heavenly regions. May there be peace on earth. May the waters be appeasing. May herbs be wholesome. May trees and plants bring peace to all. May all beings of goodwill bring peace to us all. May thy peace itself bestow peace on all, and may that peace come to me also. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Ooh. Shanti means peace. Om is the sacred sound of the divine in the elements. So three vital gifts. I think in my next life I'll be ready to be a Buddhist teacher, because they love numbers, don't they? So three vital gifts. Though, in fact, of course, I love the spaciousness of being an interspiritual teacher. I love the spaciousness of it. With profound respect to all the teachers who are... I love the spaciousness of it. So, the three vital gifts that arise from an understanding of our original nature struck me with a little bit of fire and air this morning as peace of mind, clarity of mind, and vitality of mind. the more we can love ourselves and trust one another, the less cramped our thinking can be, the less defensive, the less fearful, the less it will anticipate disaster. The less it will be catastrophic. Perhaps some of you know how painful it is to be in the grip of catastrophic thinking. I certainly do. So the question, of course, for yourselves that arises from the three gifts is, and this is a question to take into your lives as you go home, not just a question for now, noting it now, but taking it into your lives. So, more of, less of, more of, less of, more of, less of. Yeah? Who is choosing? Who is choosing? When I wrote that book, Choosing Happiness, which is not just about being ha ha ha, happy, happy, happy every minute, it's about, though that would probably be quite nice, but then how would you appreciate it? It's much more about choosing the behaviors that bring goodwill. Choosing, recognizing that you can choose, even if sometimes it takes days or weeks or months before you re-find that tipping point where choice actually feels possible. Sometimes we have to be quite patient and quite self-supporting before we know that it is I who is choosing. Now, that brings me to the next of the treasures that we've looked at in our time together, which is the treasure of your inner teacher and the treasure of the inspiration that is constantly flowing to you. Some of it through your inner teacher, some of it through the universe. But it's all one and the same. Inner, outer, all one. Sometimes it's very helpful to use your journal, inner teacher, I'm in a state of utter confusion. Show me the way. And be patient. Ask and you will receive, but be patient. And allow yourself openness to the unexpected. I hope that there have been some unexpecteds for you on retreat, where you've had opportunities and spaciousness of mind. And if you've had some very valuable unexpecteds on retreat, then do think about how you will have your moments of retreat each day so that the unexpected has an opportunity to arise. if your attention is entirely focused on the ghastly to-do list, which seems to breed upon itself, and I must say I'm getting less and less efficient. So it takes longer and longer. It's, yes, I need to take this to the inner teacher. When you take your question to the inner teacher, this is something else that we've discovered together, sometimes start with the end in mind. For example, you might want a solution to a problem. You might want to know how to manage a really difficult situation. So at first thought, or even at 101st thought, it might seem, how do I smooth the path between myself and this person? How do I get them to see things from my point of view? Because that would benefit them. or whatever it is. Some people are so slow, aren't they, to receive things? Just, it's really painful, don't you think? It's really painful. So slow to receive benefit. If we start with peace of mind as our goal, sometimes people call this the highest good for all concerned, but if we start with peace of mind, how would we go about it? So, the example, of course, is that you would very rarely achieve peace of mind. You might achieve momentary satisfaction, but you would very infrequently, very seldom achieve peace of mind by humiliating another person. One of the things that really helps in a difficult situation between yourself and another is to think from the interbeing perspective and truly to give benefit of the doubt. Now, knowing that each of us is highly defended, so sometimes in the presence of what we perceive to be a reproach, we will defend through attack. This is shared by our human family, no matter what our culture is. And of course, when it comes very large, it's what justifies violence and war. But even in the small and the subtle, people can perceive, we all can perceive, a different point of view even as an attack. And then we will defend through a greater attack. So if we start with two gifts, one of them being peace of mind and the other being benefit of the doubt, then in our thought and our thinking and our taking this to the inner teacher, we might find a way. Of course, there will also be times when emotions are simply erupting and are present, and then there needs to be some peace of mind backtracking. There needs to be some peace of mind backtracking. And how this happens is very much dependent on the particular situation, so there should not be a recipe for it. However, it is very, very helpful to bring into the accord or the re-establishing of accord your awareness that each of you is a soul doing your best. If the other person is agreeable, it's a very wonderful thing just to sit together as two souls, doing your best.
Could you explain what you meant by peace of mind backtracking?
Sometimes emotions just erupt. So we haven't got peace of mind ahead of us, but we have to backtrack to find some peace of mind. We have to be aware of what has happened. We have to be aware of the eruption and disruption of accord. So there's now discord. Yeah? So all that has already happened. But we can still have peace of mind as our goal, but we need to backtrack and in some way restore peace. Not necessarily by going over and over it. You did, you said, you should, you mightn't, you didn't, and you never and you always. No, no. I'm simply suggesting that the inner teacher, the inner wisdom, can guide us back to a place of accord. Sometimes it's very helpful simply to sit with that person. Is that clear now, Jan? Yeah. Yeah. Christine.
An acute phase where I hadn't been talking to my mother for many months, and she appeared in a very difficult situation. I said to her that I just needed to sit with my eyes closed and focus on what I needed to do in those next few hours and not speak. And that was the best thing that I could have done. And it really helped heal the relationship.
Yes. Sometimes it is also immensely helpful at a time when each person is feeling a little bit stronger, or all parties are feeling a bit stronger. I'm not speaking about your situation, I'm speaking generally. Sometimes it is also a wonderful thing, and we have practiced and learned quite a lot about listening together, to ask with real sincerity what is in your heart, and simply to listen. Oddly, when people know each other very well, it can sometimes be an act of naked courage to ask what is in your heart. See, Victoria is sitting right in front of me, and if Victoria and I were to take 20 minutes at the end of this session, and I was to say, Victoria, what is in your heart? And she spoke to me for 10 minutes. And then she said, Stephanie, what is in your heart? And I spoke for 10 minutes. We would probably feel very free, because we are without baggage of the past. We could be utterly in this moment. But when we are with people we have known forever, or very deeply for a shorter time, sometimes our not enoughness is very aroused in these painful situations. This is what it boils down to, a fear that I am not enough, you are not enough, we are not enough, it is not enough. Yeah? And that's when the ego defense mechanisms, which I write about so carefully in Intimacy and Solitude, that's when they flare. The ego is terribly insulted by anything that tells us we are not enough, which is why the spiritual truth of your enoughness, the spiritual truth that you are already there, is at one and the same time the greatest consolation that you could possibly have, and also laughable to the rational mind, which immediately tells you, God help us, you think you're enough. My, remember the time when. Or just think about this morning. Or, yeah? Yes? That is what constitutes the difference between therapy or workshops that are psychologically based, which can be very, very helpful. They can be enormously helpful and very dynamic and very freeing. And sometimes we need more. I don't think everyone needs more, by the way, but some of us, and clearly you must have felt something calling you to a retreat that is spiritual, that affirms the enoughness in you in a very particular and impersonal way. What do I mean by that? You haven't had to deserve it. You haven't had to do 25 courses before you begin to glimpse it. You haven't had to become credentialed. You haven't even had to be baptized. You have the sacrament of life within you at every moment. I mean, I treasure the sacraments, but they're renewing constantly the primal sacrament, which is life itself. You are enough. You are enough. You have enough. It is enough. We can remember. And our ego defense mechanisms, anything that drives us in a restrictive direction, can soften if we live long enough. Oh, yes.
The body can really tell you about.
Absolutely. About the restrictions. That is so true, Rod. The body can tell you so much about the restrictions. And even particular parts of the body can tell you so much about restrictions. Sometimes we feel such restriction with our breath, with our throats, with our voice, with our heart, with our clenchings. And in response to that, we can soften. And what a teacher that is, and how wonderful that you've reminded us of it, Rod. Because as we soften the body, we can soften thought. As we soften thought, we can soften reaction. I also want you to notice something else, and then we'll finish and you'll have a short break. Something else that really helps us to soften and that we have paid quite a lot of attention to is the truth of impermanence. So, for example, something may arise in you that feels less like a drive and more like a compulsion. I must, I have to, there's no avoiding, if I don't, this will, and so on and so on. Something that feels very driven, very compulsive, and that we are swept up by, we are caught by, because although we think obsessive compulsive disorder is on the spectrum of anxiety, it is actually on the spectrum of being alive. We all have obsessive thinking. We all have moments of compulsion in which our capacity to choose is lessened. When we have such moments, I must have, I need, I'm hungry for, I'm desperate for, can we acknowledge in those moments the softening truth that everything is impermanent, including this thought? This moment. If you hear this talk at another time on my website, or if you hear this talk remembering it, looking at your notes, you'll remember that moment was many moments ago. It lives in this moment, but every moment then and since has passed. This softens not just thought, but your entire being. It not only softens, with it, it brings spaciousness. And with spaciousness comes choice. And with choice comes freedom. Om Shanti.
Excuse me, can I just ask a question?
Just a sec, I'll just turn this off.